Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the First Unitarian Church of Alton. My name is Rebecca. I welcome you into this community of ministry and presence. Here we recognize that each of us are ministers in the world with unique wisdom and perspective to share. Here we recognize that we each need ministering too, for we need care, support, and the wisdom of experiences not our own. Here we recognize the world needs us, fully present and aware. Here we practice tools that help us live more deeply meaningful lives and to foster the same in all those we encounter. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate, or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We're glad you are here, and we hope to see you again on future Sundays. We remind those who offer their pledge in cash to please use the envelopes provided in the pew so that the cash will be noted as received. If you wish to offer a pledge to the congregation and have not done so, please speak with an usher and they will help you. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the ages of 4 through those doors to the left in the first room past the foyer. During the summer, children and youth are encouraged to remain with us in worship. At the front, we have a spirit chair, which includes activities for all ages. You're invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. We have one announcement from Mary Johnson. Mary Johnson has 3 bumper stickers to give away that she bought at the recent UUA General Assembly. If you want one, see her after the service. First come, first serve. There are 3 different ones. Love is our doctrine, service is our prayer. There's 2 of those. And 1, giving life the shape of justice, Unitarian Universalism. I took that one. I already took it. We'll begin with a prelude. Ben is going to light our chalice today. I invite you to recite the words with me for our chalice lighting. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. Please join me in reciting the mission statement of our congregation. Outward reaching, inward seeking, we are creating and nurturing an intentional community that values acceptance, social justice, and the embodiment of universalist principles. Come, let us question together. Our opening hymn is number 16, "'Tis a Gift to Be Simple." Reading today.
A covenant invites relationship. A covenant is not a definition of a relationship. It is the framework for our relating. A covenant leaves room for chance and change. It is humble toward evolution. It claims, I will abide with you in this common endeavor. Be present as best as I can in our becoming. This calls for a level of trust, courage, and sacrifice that needs to be nurtured, renewed, and affirmed on a regular basis. A creed creates a static truth, something that does not incorporate new insights and realities. A covenant is a dance of co-creation, keeping in step with one another in the flow of our lives. A creed seeks uniformity and a unison voice. A covenant seeks harmony and a shared voice. Sometimes we may arrive at a unison, but it is not required. A creed gives authority to the statement. A covenant gives authority to shared intention. A creed creates an us and them. A covenant invites relationship. A creed is a prescription that must be relied on. A covenant relies on treasures of shared truth. The overall trust within this covenant is in the truth, capital T, something which no one person can fully see, yet something which each and every person can come to know. In glimpses in another story, in epiphanies, truth is ever-changing in our seeking to understand becoming of our limited perspectives. We grow into a deeper sense of the meaning of all things when we take our journey seriously with full heart and mind. The courage within this covenant is in the acceptance and celebration of life, with all of its challenges, pain, ironies, and joy. And the sacrifice within this covenant is in the letting go of dogma, of assumptions, of control, and giving over a greater wisdom which comes to us in bits and pieces. The task of this covenant is to take responsibility for the freedom we espouse. We know that we are interconnected and that what we do creates ripples of hope or despair, of affirmation or negation. What we do with and for one another is powerful and beyond our imagining.
Thank you, Paul. Ben has agreed to read our intergenerational story.
Upon a time, there was a girl named Wendy. She loved grass. What can I say? She loved grass. She loved the feel of it between her toes. She loved the smell of it when it was freshly mowed. She loved it bright green, its bright green color. Wendy loved grass more than just about anything. One day, her family decided to go to the beach. Wendy wasn't so sure about it. "Come on," said her older brother. "We can go swimming, and we can collect rocks and shells together," said her mom. "And you can bury me in sand, said her dad. It sounded like fun, so they all piled into the car, and off they went. When they got to the beach, it sure looked great, like nothing Wendy had ever seen. But when she first touched the sand, it was way, way, way too hot. "This isn't cool like grass," she said. "I wish this sand was grass," she cried. Now Wendy had a good luck fairy who followed her around. And he heard her wish and decided to grant it. So with a flash, all the sand turned into grass. Now it was her family's turn to be not so sure. Wendy, of course, was delighted. "I guess I won't get buried today," said Dad. "That's okay," said Mom. "Let's collect some shells." Everyone went down to where the water lapped the edge of the grass. There were polished rocks, beautiful shells lying all about. They all set to work looking for the shiniest or the biggest or the most colorful. Everyone except Wendy. "Ouch," she said. "Ouch. Eek." The rocks and the shells hurt her feet. "I wish these rocks were soft like grass," she thought to herself. And as soon as she did, her good luck fairy, who could hear her thoughts as well as her words, made it so. The rocks and shells turned into grass too. The family looked at one another. "Well," they said, "at least there's swimming." Everybody laid their beach towels on the grass and changed into their bathing suits. "Last one is a rotten egg," Wendy's older brother cried, and he ran into the waves, followed closely behind Wendy's sister. She delighted squeals, trailing behind. Wendy followed tentatively, but when her toes touched the water, she said, "Yuck, too wet and cold." This time, she didn't even have to think. The fairy changed the water into grass without her having to ask for it. Everyone turned to her and said, "Wendy?" But what was she to do? But her family was very understanding. They were all, after all, Unitarian Universalists. So they decided to try make the best of it. "Let's have lunch," said Mom and Dad. So they got out their picnic baskets, found a nice spot on the now wide lawn, spread out their checkered cloth, and they all set to it. Wendy was in heaven. After all, didn't she love grass more than just about anything? But she had to admit, she was beginning to feel a bit bored, and something just didn't feel right. After everything, where she looked, there was nothing but grass, and all the sounds of the beach and waves and seagulls, all of it, they'd just gone too. Grass was nice, but maybe not so much when that's all that there was. "Well," said her mom, "we went to the beach and were at a lawn. This isn't the way it's supposed to be." "What do you mean?" Wendy asked. Her dad said, "You made it all the same. The sand, the rocks, the water, each was different, and you made them the same because there was differences you made you feel uncomfortable. But those differences also made them special and beautiful. Without them, there's a whole lot missing. In fact, everything that makes this place what it is missing. And that means that you are missing out on everything you really came here for. Wendy thought about this for a while, and she did want to collect rocks and shells. She seen some really beautiful ones, and the water was cold, but her brother and sisters liked, they were having a lot of fun too. And the idea of burying her father in sand was good too good to pass up. I wish it was all back the way it was, she thought. And the good luck fairy made her wish come true. Wendy and her family had the best time that day. She still loves grass more than just about anything, and she learned to love other things too. And she's come across some things that she didn't like much. And again, because she didn't know that there's supposed to be different each things as it is, and that exploring new things makes life so much fun.
Thank you, Ben. Each week, we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter, or from the bowl here on the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our life through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a little bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you're invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow. Place a stone in the bowl for those who can't be with us here today. For all those joys and sorrows that we are unable to share. And our meditation today is by Reverend Sam Trombore. I invite you now into a time of gratitude, reflection, renewal, and hope. What an unearned blessing to delight in the calming peace of this space, to hear the robin's song again at daybreak, to feel the warmth in this room, and to enjoy the promise of summer almost upon us. Each moment of wakefulness has so many gifts that offer energy and delight, yet too often they seem unavailable as the weight of our troubles press down on us, the threats to our well-being, real or exaggerated, feel like mosquitoes in the night looking for a place to land. Minds become captive to rising floodwaters, forceful, murky, threatening, and ominous. Even in moments of great danger, the direction of attention is a choice. Fear can dominate the mind, binding it like a straitjacket. Or love can unbind it and open it to resource and opportunity. The soil of the mind can be watered with kindness. The thorns can be removed one by one to appreciate the buds ready to flower. Great possibilities await us, even if all we can see is the cliff before us. The grandeur of life, of which we are a part, scatters rainbows in every direction, even as the deluge approaches. Holding reality and possibility together is the holy hope-filled work of humanity. If we choose it again and again, in love. Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow. Join me in our meditation song number 123, Spirit of Life.
Each week we take some time to pool our financial resources to the work of this church. We are a community who believes in doing and modeling for the world in a way of love and grace that affirms life. We are a community who believes in a personal free speech for meaning and truth. We are a community who believes that we are interdependent and connected. Our financial gifts provide a home for such believers and witness to those values in a world that sorely needs these messages. This morning's offering will be gratefully received. May it be lovingly given.
Please join me in reciting the offering blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves, and these are offerings. Our sermon today is called A Politics of Respect by Dennis J. Daniel. I hear a lot of talk about the dangers our country faces from the religious right, and I could probably come up with a strong and righteous condemnation of the Christian Coalition's politics, with a few zingers directed at Pat Robertson and Jesse Helms. We should all go away feeling good about ourselves, and some of my listeners would tell me how good my sermon was, but that would be a cheap shot. I would feel cheap doing it, and my doing so would cheapen the impact that we have together. Instead, I want to look at what the phrase liberal religion means. First, I want to look at the question of whether liberal religion, specifically Unitarian Universalist religion, has lost its center and its power to transform individuals. Certainly on the surface, one could say that we have opened the doors so wide and set the barriers so low that anyone could find a home here without having to undergo any kind of conversion experience. All you have to do is sign the book. No tests are required and no challenges are posed. What is more, many people who find their way to us have the experience of finally having discovered something they had long been looking for. They come here and feel that this is indeed the home they have searched for. Rather than requiring a conversion experience or manipulating them into one, we affirm our new members in being who they are. This is a place of comfort, freedom, and permission. But becoming a Unitarian Universalist just begins when a person signs the membership book. Typically, a person who becomes enmeshed in our community undergoes a slow process of integrating our values, learning what they mean as we live them, rather than as we read them off the page of a book. The result, after many months or even years, is a person who might aptly be described as a deep UU. A deep UU is someone who has tested himself or herself by striving to live up to the idea of the worth and dignity of every human being in all walks of life. A deep UU is a person who has struggled to discover the complex interconnections that enfold and encumber every person and every nation on this planet. A deep UU has learned the law of reciprocity, that if they are to have any meaning, the freedoms we claim for ourselves must be extended to all, that any criticism we would level against others must start with reflection on our own role and the controversy under discussion, that the right to be critical must be bought with personal involvement. Eventually, a deep UU moves beyond defending the cause of the day and develops a deep awareness of social ills as well as social strengths. A deep UU gets to the point of no longer being able to remain silent. Integrity, conscience, and compassion all demand personal participation in the political process as beneficiary, as witness, as speaker for a vision, as worker for change. And through that involvement, a deep UU gains backbone, dedication, and courage. This is where I think soul enters into politics. So yes, liberal religion is transformative, but the process takes a long time. And that is to the good. Beware the zeal of the convert. It may be full of energy, but it has shallow roots and a narrow understanding. And I don't want to ignore what I would call Unitarian Universalism's blind side, which is our too easy assumption that we have to teach, that what we have to teach is too sophisticated for most people, and we appeal only to the well-educated, or possibly to the well-jaded. The corollary of this assumption is that our outreach must either be to others like ourselves, or that it is a form of noblesse oblige or paternalism, something we do out of principle for the benefit of those less fortunate than we. In order to combat this assumption of elite status, we need to clarify our theological basis, which might best be done by comparing our theology with the Calvinist Christianity we broke away from 2 centuries ago. We can start by contrasting our two theories of human nature. Calvinism assumes that human beings are born depraved and in need of redemption. Unitarian Universalism assumes, on the other hand, that human beings are born innocent. Calvinism asserts that we are all sinful by nature, while Unitarian Universalism sees us as capable of good as well as evil actions. The basic transaction of Calvinism is acknowledgement of humanity's sinfulness, which only increases one's awe at the immensity of God's grace. The basic transaction of Unitarian Universalism is self-expression, moderated by learning within a religious community. The goal for Calvinism is union with an utterly transcendent God. This can only be accomplished by the grace purveyed by Jesus, the Christ. The Unitarian Universalist assumption is that we are born possessing grace, and that the purpose of life is to become purveyors of that grace to those who don't yet realize that they have it. Let's move on to our differing understandings of ultimate things, God, ultimate reality, or universal process, whatever we might want to call it. The God of Calvinism is transcendent and judgmental, while the God of liberal religion is immanent and nurturing. The Calvinist God exists in a static universe, while the God of liberal religion exists in a changing, growing, evolving universe that is constantly becoming more complex. The God of Calvinism is closely identified with absolute rules and absolute ideas. The God of liberal religion is identified with tentative truths and ambiguities. The God of Calvinism demands faith above all things. Liberal religion's God requires good works above all things. It's a strange fact that the judging, rigorous, static God seems to inspire zeal, while the nurturing, growing, evolving God often inspires complacency and is indeed not transformative. But as I tried to show earlier, conviction comes after long acquaintance with the God of liberal religion. It develops out of a growing realignment of attitudes, allegiances, and actions with the profound truth of our faith that salvation is not for the individual, but for the entire world, and that can only come when we achieve universal recognition of every person's importance and all people's interdependence. If we understand our freedoms to be evidence that we are living in a relationship of grace with our God, we can only demonstrate its importance to us by acting in love toward our neighbors. When we start talking about carrying our convictions into the world, we inevitably enter the realm of politics, because today, especially, politics is the mechanism of organizing society. Its basic questions are, one, from whom do we extract how much money? And two, to what ends do we spend it? The answers to both these questions evolve some theory of government's role in shaping society. Again, conservatives and liberals have different understandings of the role of government, and I want to look at the strengths and the inconsistencies of both points of view. Conservatives seem to be most concerned with maintenance of the social fabric. Thus, we see such conservative initiatives as trying to establish English as the official language, opposition to pornography and sexual license, and concern for traditional values. I share some of these concerns myself, as do most of us, I would imagine. Conservatives also seem to harbor a deep discomfort with sexuality, perhaps because it is such a powerful drive and so centrifugal in its pull, impatient of boundaries and disruptive of order. Conservatism, as it finds expression in these United States, also encompasses some paradoxes, like opposition to gun laws. Even though guns are a great and lasting danger to social cohesion, heavy spending on the military, despite the dislocations of this causes in our economy, and despite the essentially wasteful or unconserving nature of spending on armaments. In addition, conservatism often seems to hold a punitive attitude toward the poor and a rather narrow definition of who we are as a society. In addition, conservatives tend to combine a belief in the use of force to subdue disorder with a deep distrust of government, the approved instrument of force. And they tend to combine a belief in an ordered society with a dislike of the restraints that would require businesses to uphold that order. The liberal understanding of government is that its purpose is to convey rights and privileges to groups and individuals whom society would otherwise disenfranchise: women, ethnic and racial minorities, the poor, the sick, and the disabled. Thus, we liberals, promoting laws that protect the rights of prisoners, laws requiring affirmative action, laws establishing health care for the poor, and laws regulating safety in the workplace. Liberalism also has its aberrations and paradoxes. While theologically it sees all persons as possessors of grace and dignity, in policy, it acts as though persons were victims of their surroundings. Because it is so accepting of human difference, it often experiences paralysis in the face of conflict. Where conservatives would let business act without restraint, liberalism has a tendency to let agencies act without restraint. And it frequently creates severe disruptions in the social fabric as a side effect of some large, well-intended project, the destruction of Black communities as a result of integration, being an example. In addition, while seeing itself as the protector of the individual, liberalism inherently distrusts what individuals do in large groups and in business enterprises. It sees persons as corrupted or victimized by the forces of society. So on the far right, we find what might be called a politics of blame, which sees poverty and misfortune as evidence of character defects and demands self-discipline and hard work as the remedies. On the far left, we find a politics of forgiveness, which sees misfortune as a result of implacable societal forces that makes victims of us all. Both are right and both are wrong. In their place, I would suggest that we cultivate a politics of respect. Respect for the abilities and determination of individuals as well as respect for the sizable obstacles they often have to overcome. But we need to start with respect for what Jim Wallace called the authentic voice of the powerless. True respect for the disadvantaged requires that we let them speak for themselves, rather than assume that we know what they need. It also requires that we honor their willingness and ability to create a meaningful life for themselves, and that we deal in skills and tools, as well as in welfare payments and donations of food when those are necessary. And true respect requires that we impose on those we hope to help, and on governments, institutions, and businesses, the duty of honoring the fabric of the whole. We need to return to the notion of the social compact as a universal benefit to which all contribute. This means making the demands of citizenship on the powerless at the same time that we make equivalent demands on business and government. Freedom must be forever linked to responsibility. Soul enters politics, as I said earlier, with our realization that love of neighbor extends beyond acts of friendship or charity and becomes active involvement in the processes which shape society and extend its benefits. Few of us may have ambitions of holding high public office. If we are involved in politics, we tend to do it at a local level, on school boards, borough councils, and county committees. But all of us here have ways that we can become involved. All of us have a voice which we can make heard. All of us know how to use the pen as an instrument of public opinion. All of us have money in large or small amounts which we can use to support values, exert pressure, and make our feelings known. And all of us have the power of our presence and the force of a moral vision. We have the power that comes from reconnecting personal values to political morality. We can put ourselves on the line in asserting the covenantal character of our relationships. Soul enters into politics when we enter the fray and bring our convictions and our civilizing values with us. Politics is not something that happens in Trenton or in Washington. It begins here with us. We create political space by the simple act of living as though there were political space. We need to live as though no alternative vision were possible. Please rise as your spirits and bodies allow, and join me in our closing hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us. All emerge from, dwell within, are transformed by and called back to love. May your mind be humbled before this mystery. May your heart grow hopeful by it. May you be sustained by this love always. Our worship has ended. Let our service begin.